30 issues in 30 days, issue 29, Stop and Frisk, as an issue in the mayoral race. The NYPD is on track to stop more than 600,000 New Yorkers on the streets this year, overwhelmingly black and Latino young men. Only a small fraction of them will be arrested. Bill Thompson says 600,000 is excessive and that he would use better judgment in applying stop and frisk, though he would not abolish the program. This is also an issue for Bill de Blasio, the Democratic nominee for public advocate, who joins us now. He says police community relations will be one of the four major things he focuses on when he takes office. We'll get a more aggressively pro-stop and frisk view from Heather McDonald of the Manhattan Institute later. Mr. de Blasio, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And I want to start with a clip of Deputy Police Commissioner Paul Brown on this show recently. We always hear the term stop and frisk without many people really knowing what that term means. So I asked Deputy Commissioner Paul Brown to explain how it works.
If there's a report of a bodega held up at gunpoint, for example, and it gives a description of a male in his 20s wearing dark sweatshirt running northbound on whatever, 7th Avenue. The immediate response, that's considered a heavy job where you have a gun and you have a robbery. Mm-hmm. Units in the immediate vicinity are responding en masse to that. They're stopping lots of people, maybe 10, 15, in the first minutes of it.
Deputy NYPD Commissioner Paul Brown on the Stop and Frisk program. Public advocate candidate Bill de Blasio is with us. Do you understand the nature and practice of the program that way or any differently from the way Paul Brown described it there?
Well, I think he is describing the ideal, and I'm sure that happens a certain amount of time. I think the great concern here, which I feel, and I hear from folks all over the city, is that we've strayed away from that. When you have 600,000 discrete stop and frisk incidents, it's hard to believe that all of them are as specific as the dynamics that the deputy commissioner pointed out there. We need to make sure that this is not being used too broadly, and we need to make sure it's being used in a fair manner. And I think the concern in many communities, particularly communities of color, is it's become a much too broad brush a tool. And the number of people who have experienced it is extraordinary, which suggests it is far beyond a response to specific incidents.
So can you describe
demoralizing, and that's part of the problem here. People feel it's being used indiscriminately.
Can you lay out some of the other scenarios in which you think it's actually being used?
Oh, what I hear all the time from people, and bluntly from people who are not involved in anything untoward, who are, and I don't mean to typify in any manner here, but professional people, well-dressed people, you name it, people saying they are frisked at the drop of a hat and without explanation. And
well,
what is the
drop of the hat? Because certainly the NYPD would say we don't just stop people at random; we have to have some kind of suspicion.
And again, I believe that is the appropriate standard. I believe this is an important tool. And I said that in one of the debates. I would never stop the practice of stop and frisk. What I want to make sure is that it's being used appropriately and consistently, that the training for officers says you use it only when there is a specific reason to use it, and that there's oversight. And I think we've seen that despite the very good work of the NYPD, and obviously we all commend the fact that our city is much safer and the vast majority of NYPD officers are doing a good job, there are still nagging problems, and this is part of why I care so much about strengthening the Civilian Complaint Review Board. I think the bottom line here is 600,000, which has been a significant increase from the past, suggests that in many instances this is not being used for so specific a reason as the deputy commissioner pointed out there. And if that is the case, that policy needs to be reviewed, because I think it is having a damaging impact on police community relations in a number of communities.
So it sounds like
you're keep the policy, but improve it.
So you're exactly aligned with the head of your ticket, mayoral candidate Bill Thompson, who says stop and frisk is being done in an excessive way, though he would keep the program.
Correct.
Our next guest, Heather McDonald, a big supporter of stop and frisk, says it's the only reliable method for taking illegal guns off the street and an essential tool for interrupting crimes in progress. She also says a 2007 study by the RAND Corporation refutes the notion that the NYPD is infringing on minority civil rights. She says the disparities in stop rates reflect even larger disparities in crime rates. How much of that do you disagree with?
Well, I put it this way. I am not going to argue with the fact that the city has become safer over the last decade. I'm very happy about that. Everyone is. I am going to argue with the fact that the way we continue to make our city safer is by moving to a true community policing philosophy. I think, in other words, I believe we have, at various points over the last 10, 20 years, started down the road towards community policing and then stopped many times. We've never fully approached the concept of really bringing the police and community together so that it is not there's not a separation, which is the reality on the ground today. So there's actually a lot of clear presence on, you know, beat cops, people interacting with each other. We're not there, and I think that is the way forward. My answer to that would be, you know, if you have had the experience I've had of talking to people all over this city who are deeply concerned that there's excessive targeting going on and that it is creating a barrier between the police and the community, and unfortunately some specific incidents and tragedies have added to that, it means we can't keep moving forward with the vision of community policing. So I don't believe that where we want to go in the future of this city is keeping that barrier up. I actually think we're trying to move the historical arc here so that we get those two pieces of the equation to come together. And if stop and frisk at an ever-increasing level stands in the way of that, I think it's a problem.
And listeners, we want your stop and frisk experiences. We have time for a few of these anyway. Have you ever been stopped under this program? 212-433-WNYC. Many of the 600,000 are being stopped but not frisked. Many are being stopped and frisked but not arrested. A few, only about 10%, are being arrested. So what was your experience with the NYPD Stop and Frisk program, especially if you were let go? 212-433-9692. Did it make you feel humiliated and angry, or did it make you feel the police were protecting you and your neighborhood? 212-433-WNYC. We want your personal stop and frisk experiences. 212-433-9692. And we'll play a clip a little later of Thompson, Mr. de Blasio, who will not set a target for stop and frisk reduction. He wouldn't set a number when asked. He wouldn't say 500,000 or 400,000. What about you?
Look, the bottom line is I truly respect Commissioner Kelly. I served with him in the Dinkins administration. I think he's been a big part of why things have moved forward. So the way I would look at it is this. I think the mandate should be to review the policy, to question why the numbers are increasing and why so disproportionately in some communities, and to ask if there's a way to approach a strategy and to train officers to be more discerning so that it is closer to the model that the deputy commissioner talked to you about. I think if that kind of process is undertaken, I imagine there's a way to reduce the number of stop and frisk that are a broad brush, if you will.
But you don't want to take a guess as to by how many those practices would reduce it.
No, I don't want to take a guess because I don't pretend to be a police professional. I want to have a public discussion. And, Brian, this is a crucial point. I commend you for doing the 30 issues in 30 days because there's not enough issue-focused reporting going on in these campaigns. I think we need a public discussion about whether this strategy has gone too far, whether it is inhibiting improved police-community relations. And look, if the police can, if the commissioner and others can show us why, in fact, these stop and frisk incidents are being, you know, are being implemented in very specific manners with very specific rules, I think it would be reassuring to the public. But if they can't show us that, then the question is, what reforms need to be made in the practice? I don't have a magic number, but that number, 600,000, sounds excessive to me. And certainly, again, I there's a consent of the governed issue here. A lot of people in communities, including communities that are facing real challenges with crime, are telling me and telling a lot of us in public life that they feel it's excessive, that it's a concern of theirs. And I think we need to have a public discussion that responds to that.
Jude in Soundview, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Jude.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call and definitely addressing this issue. It is a very serious issue, especially in the neighborhood of the Bronx where I currently live. I manage and direct a real estate company in Midtown, but I chose to live in the Bronx because the commercial aspect of my company, a lot of my business is up here. My personal concern is that I am very openly gay. I like men of different colors, and most of my boyfriends have been of the opposite race. I've been constantly pulled over numerous times in my nice car with my top down and my boyfriends because people think, mostly the police, that I'm with drug dealers. After they've searched my vehicle and they realize that I have a family member badge in my glove box, that they back off. But this has happened too many times, to a point where it actually gets annoying and I do email Christine Quinn. Now, I've already been in contact with the mayor's office about this, but let's not forget what happened in the Bronx many years ago with Amadou Diallo. Okay? It is ridiculous. The police need to really learn how to re-educate themselves, and this needs to stop.
Jude, thank you very much. And there's an interesting type of profiling, Mr. de Blasio. White young male with black young male in the South Bronx must be a drive-by drug deal.
It's not the first time I've heard that. Not just males together, but that when people of different races are together, that unfortunately creates a profiling dynamic. Now, as you know, that's particularly troubling to me. I happen to be a member of a multiracial family, and I think if the message people are getting in this city is that somehow if people of different races are together, that members of the police force will interpret that as involving criminal activity, and that's obviously a huge concern. I think the vast majority of the police are doing a good job. I actually think one of the great things that Commissioner Kelly has done is to really bring in a whole new leadership class into the police department down to the precinct level that's trying to move us more towards community policing. And that's all the more reason why I think this policy needs to be reviewed aggressively and I think changed, because it isn't consistent with where we need to go going forward. The story that Jude told is exactly what I was trying to refer to in the beginning. Someone who is a law-abiding citizen in every way, and there are lots of indicators that they are, and yet one thing can cause this to happen. And again, this is not what the deputy commissioner told you. What Jude experienced, if it happened multiple times to him, is not because a specific incident happened at that moment and the police fanned out to check people who might fit a particular description. Right. What he's saying is something much more indiscriminate.
Right. 30 issues in 30 days, our New York, New Jersey election series. Issue 29, stop and frisk as an issue in the mayoral race. Councilman Bill de Blasio, Democratic candidate for public advocate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our next guest is a strong supporter of the program, Heather McDonald, the Olin Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor to their City Journal. Hi, Heather. Welcome back to WNYC.
Not a whole lot of
fun. Whoops. Do we have Heather? Okay. Maybe we don't have Heather yet. So, Heather, you there?
I am, Brian. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for coming on. And here are parts of an exchange I had with Democratic candidate for Mayor Bill Thompson about stop and frisk during the mayoral primary debate we did in August.
Stop and frisk, when used appropriately, is a positive policing tool. However, I think that what we are seeing is the continued growth of that. Right now, the numbers in the first 6 months of this year indicate that we're going to hit an all-time high, and last year was another high. It looks like there'll be over 600,000 stop and frisk in the city of New York. And what we've seen is about 88% of the people who were stopped, there's nothing wrong. I think that the one thing, as mayor, I would continue stop and frisk, but make sure it is used appropriately.
Bill Thompson from the mayoral primary debate in August. Heather McDonald from the Manhattan Institute is here. Heather, do you share his concern at all, either about how big the numbers are getting overall, 600,000, or the ratio between those stopped and those actually arrested for something, which indicates a lot of innocent people are being stopped?
Well, Brian, Mr. Thompson didn't suggest what he thinks the appropriate number of stops are or what the appropriate summons and arrest rate is. And I would say that if you look at the CCRB's own data, they substantiated about 113 complaints last year regarding stop and frisks. The results speak for themselves. Crime is still going down. There's no other city in the country that has maintained its crime drop through the 90s into the 2000s.
If crime is still going down, why do the number of stops need to be going up by maybe 100,000?
Well, the city is doing very proactive policing, and the city has started using its impact zones, which sends officers to the highest crime areas, sends rookie cops right out of the academy, and does intensive policing. I think, you know, there may be an effort to make sure that the crime drop keeps going down, so it sends officers into the highest crime rate areas, like the 75th precinct in Brooklyn, which also has the highest crime rates, and makes stops. I don't know if any of us are able to say that a 12% summons or arrest rate, which is identical for blacks and whites who've been stopped, is too high or too low. And just because the officers don't make a summons or arrest doesn't mean that the stop was not justified legally, or, more importantly, there wasn't actually criminal activity going on. A high proportion of stops, if you study the 250 forms, are based on the officer's belief that somebody may be casing a victim or a property or acting as a lookout. In those cases, the officers made a stop and may have, in fact, interrupted criminal activity, but there won't be grounds to make a summons or an arrest.
But nothing approaching 88% of the time.
But, Brian, what do you think is an appropriate rate of finding grounds for summons or arrest? And a lot of times as well, I mean, if you know, the officers are using their discretion. For one thing, also let's get on the table the fact that the 500 or so thousand refers only to questioning. As far as actual frisking, that's less than half that number, about 250,000 frisks, and they search about 10%. But in many cases, if they're questioning somebody or talking to someone, they'll just give them a warning and not issue a summons. The alternative might be if somebody is drinking at 3 p.m. and the officer is stopping him, will say, pour out your beer. In doing so, you've decreased the chance of a knife fight or gunplay at 11 p.m. if that drinking continues. But rather than issuing a summons, which the officer would be legally justified in doing, mm-hmm. he just intercedes and walks on. Thompson has called for a study of this problem. Either he's planning to waste taxpayers' money on a study that's already been done, or he intends to radically cut back, which I think would be a mistake. In 2007, the RAND Corporation, which is the premier research organization in the country, studied this exact same problem and called for no changes in stop and frisk policy besides making sure that officers explain to the people whom they've stopped why they're stopping and changing some of the grounds that are listed on the 250 form. But it found no significant racial disparities when you compare the stop rates to crime rates. In fact, so, blacks are being understopped.
Crazy in the South Bronx. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling. Hello.
How you doing, Brian?
Good. What's up?
Great job. This is a small African community in the South Bronx, 167 Sheridan. We have African stores, mosques. Okay, they've been harassing us, you know, the precinct at 44th precinct.
What do you mean by harassing?
They're always in the area. They're always in the neighborhood, okay? I was stopped and frisked, and when I did protest, I was arrested, and I was put in the hole for 2 days for no reason.
When you were stopped, were you told the reason that you were being stopped, as the RAND Corporation asked the NYPD to do?
No, I wasn't. The cop did not tell me the reason why. And when I did protest, he arrested me, and you know what? He put charges on me for resisting arrest and obstruction of governmental, you know, employee's job or something like that.
Crazy. Yep. I'm going to leave it there and take another experience from Samuel.
Well, can I just respond,
Heather, real quick?
Okay. I mean, if that's true that Crazy was doing nothing, that was clearly an abuse of power. But I would like to know what the officers. Point of view was and whether there was grounds. I would assume that there was grounds perhaps for that stop. 65% of the complaints that are made are rejected by the CCRB just immediately because there's absolutely no grounds for them.
And Kwesi in the South Bronx, thank you for your call. Samuel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, I was stopped, actually, in the beginning of the summer during June. I just got out of a restaurant with my family, my wife, and my two daughters. So my little daughter was 2, and my other one was 7 months at the time.
In Bay Ridge?
I walked in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, yes. And I just walked to my car, and as I'm putting my daughters in the car, two officers come up to me and say, stop, you have to hold it there. I go, okay, what's going on? We just have to stop you here. I go, yeah, but what's the problem? And I see one officer on his phone and the other one on the radio, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? You tell me to stop here, but what's the reason? And I said, we're looking for someone that looks like you. I go, okay. And what happened, though? What's going on? As I'm putting my daughter in the car at the same time saying that, one of the officers grabbed my arm. I said, don't worry, I'm not going nowhere. You can let go of my arm. He's squeezing really hard. And I'm like, you can let go of my arm. And, you know, the other officer is talking on the phone, and as I tell the officer what's going on, and can you please let go of my arm, the officer on the phone tells me to shut up. And I tell him, you don't have to be rude. I'm just asking what's going on. You know, I'm trying to cooperate with them because I have my daughters there.
And Samuel, I'm going to leave it there for time. And of course, we can't substantiate here that happened to you. But there are stories like this. Heather, do you think your own son or daughter would feel traumatized if they were 17 years old and stopped in that fashion?
Well, I think it's more traumatic to be shot. You know, the question is, NYPD policing is uniquely successful. There is simply no city in the country that has had a 77% crime drop since the early 90s. And if homicide levels had remained at their early 90s levels, there would have been 13,000 people who were dead today who were alive, the vast majority of them, about 90%, black or Hispanic. 700 people are alive today who would have been dead if the crime rates had remained at their 2001 levels.
So why do you think...
Officers have to explain. There's no question, Brian. I agree with the RAND report. I agree with many findings that officers develop an attitude. They're not courteous enough. But this recent caller, Samuel, he was stopped because they were looking for somebody who looked like him. The stop practices gave gangbangers an excuse not to carry their guns. They said, I can't take my gun. I've got to leave it at home because I might get stopped. We have done an extraordinary job of lowering gun violence. There's no other way to get illegal guns off the street, Brian.
So why do you think, and we just have 30 seconds left, so this is the last question, that Bill de Blasio was saying there's a morale problem developing in the community where the program results in a barrier between police and the community, unless you don't think that's real?
Well, I've gone to CCRB meetings across the city. Nobody shows up. They're empty. The panel ends up talking to itself. People are not coming out to complain of police brutality. If there's a barrier, people are cooperating with the police. I think the anti-police activists send out the message that the police are racist. But if you look at the numbers, Brian, blacks are stopped at a rate lower than their rate of violent crime. They commit 68% of all violent crime in this city, 82% of all shootings, and 73% of all robberies. They're stopped at 52% of all stop and frisk.
And we're going to have to leave it there, except Heather, on a lighter note, I'm told that they're constructing the Second Avenue subway right outside your window, and that's what that racket is, yeah?
It's happening. I can testify to it. Whether we'll have any businesses left when they're finished, I don't know, but we will apparently have a subway.
Can you open the window? Is it openable? Can we hear it
better? Let's see what we've got now. They've been drilling today.
This is a newsflash. They're actually building the Second Avenue subway.
You should see what's... No, they sound very quiet. I don't know if you can hear anything beyond the... But they've got... I've looked in. They've got a tunnel there. They've got beams. It's quite impressive, and they've got a massive crane there today.
What's your cross street?
93rd and 2nd. So they're going to put a subway stop in my building. But they've been active for the last 2 or 3 years. And as nice as it is to have another corridor of rapid transit, I think when a city gets to be this developed, doing it underground is insane because these poor businesses are stuck behind walls and fences. and they're hurting really bad, Brian.
One voice against the Second Avenue subway, a longer conversation for another day. Heather McDonald from the Manhattan Institute and the City Journal, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Brent.
The second of two views on Issue 29 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days New York, New Jersey election series. Tomorrow, Issue 30, term limits. Stay with us for Nora Willis Aronowitz, who wrote a book about going cross-country and looking for modern feminism. Stay with us.